Hi everyone, thanks for watching. So today we're here with Dr. Erna Sif-Arnadottir, who is our ESRS Secretary and the Assistant Professor at Reykjavik University's Department of Engineering and Department of Computer Science. She's also the Director of the newly founded Reykjavik University Sleep Institute. So last month, the European Commission awarded 508 million euros in grants as part of their Health Horizon 2020 research projects that aim to improve overall health and well-being in Europe. And so we'd really like to congratulate Dr. Erna and her colleagues for being the recipients of a 15 million euro grant for their project Sleep Revolution. So Erna and her team will, congratulations, it's a really huge award. So we'd really like to hear about your project Sleep Revolution and what you're working on and what your project aims are. So thank you for joining us today.
Of course, happy to be here. So, what do you want to start?
we know that you're working on the different pathophysiological effects of sleep disordered breathing, including habitual snoring and severe sleep apnea. So we're just curious if you could give us a brief overview of what are the main causes of sleep disordered breathing, what are the risks and the treatments, and what are some current difficulties in diagnosing and treating this?
The current situation is that we have the indexes we have that to say if someone has sleep apnea, they are severely outdated. So we only go really by the apnea-hypopnea index, even though many clinicians will also look at symptoms and other factors in the recordings. But in reality, we are still working just with this AHI or apnea-hypopnea index, where we count events per hour. And if you have more than 15 events per hour, we say, yes, you have sleep apnea that needs treatment. If it's between 5 and 15, you may need treatment. And then it doesn't matter if the event is 10 seconds or 2 minutes, which is completely insane if you think about it. If you think about the physiological effect of having a 2-minute apnea versus a 10-second hypopnea. And everyone who has looked at sleep recording sees how variable these effects are, both for the hypoxia that follows, how much it is affecting the pulse and the cardiovascular systems. So we know we need to do more than just count. And we're still working as if we were on paper, like we did in the 80s. It's before my time in sleep, but apparently there was like a phone book of paper after each night of sleep recording. And of course, then they didn't have the necessary tools to do more, but now we have so much more. We have the fourth industrial revolution. I always say we lost or missed the first, second, and third in sleep, so we really do need to be in the fourth. And we need to use all of these machine learning opportunities, signal processing, and all the tools we have to do much, much better. But to change diagnostic criteria is, of course, very demanding. And the medical sciences are conservative for a reason. You can't also just say the AHI is bad, we need something better, and not explain what that better is. So to do that, we will have in this study, we will have over 30,000 sleep recordings that are collected all over Europe, mostly as in the ESARA network, the European Sleep Apnea Database, that are partners in this application. And we will also have some studies, clinical studies from other places, and our partner in Iceland, Decode Genetics, they will provide about 4,000 sleep studies probably. And we will have the sleep studies as well as cardiovascular consequences, diabetes, other diseases, as well as symptoms. And then we want to map out a better index, better than the AHI, something to add on to the AHI. And then we will validate this in prospective studies. So they will be done throughout Europe again.
So what is the timeline of the project right now? Are the patients already recruited, or is this something?
No. So we have we have 4 years. We haven't actually signed the final contract with the European Union yet. So we are doing all the documentation. They basically said to us, yes, we are willing to give you a grant. And now we need to do all the documentation with the EU, which, as you can imagine, there's a lot of documentation that needs to be done, which is also fair if you're going to ask for 15 million euros. it's okay if you have to sign some documents. So the first 2 years that we are building up this retrospective database and working that data. And then the second 2 years, so that is then we will start early 2021. So in 2023 and 2024, then we have these prospective studies where we are collecting new patients into our studies to validate these new indices and new severity markers of sleep apnea. And what we hope to do is also not just to look at sleep apnea as with this old tradition that you have to have a cessation of respiration, but also to look at the important role of snoring. Some people call me the snore lady because I really like to investigate snoring. And I've had people on my team listening to snoring for hundreds of hours because we are working on an automatic analyzer of snoring so that we can validate objectively whether snoring is having some negative effects on patients or not. Currently, it's all subjective. Most of the studies are subjective, and the partner says, yes, he or she snores, and they snore loudly, but we don't really know what to do with that information. So we need objective studies where you have a microphone, and you can basically hear that person snoring throughout the night. And for more than one night, we are going to do three-night studies in our grants. So we can also look at the variability in both sleep apnea and snoring severity.
Will you be looking at this in a sleep lab, or can patients do this at home?
So that is one of the aims of the grant, is to bring the advanced diagnostics into the patient home. So instead of having one night in a sleep lab where you're hooked up to all these wires and stuff, and instead of doing these typically very limited studies at home that people can put on themselves, there will be a self-applied polysomnography, basically. So people can put it on themselves, but they will still get a proper sleep study, actually measuring sleep, not just respiration during, hopefully, sleep. Yeah.
So are you primarily then going to look at this in adults then? Because it might be, I guess, difficult for children to...
Yes, but I mean, in the future, then the parents can put it on the children. But the scope of this grant is large enough, just focusing on adults. So hopefully we can then, in the years following, we can adapt and use it for children as well. Because like with the snoring issue is huge for children. We have a lot of studies showing just when you assess snoring subjectively, asking the parents if the child is snoring, there's a lot of negative consequences of snoring in children, both attention deficit, hyperactive behavior, more aggression. They have worse school grades. There's a lot of negative things that are coming out of snoring just by asking in a questionnaire if the child is snoring. And there again, we really need objective measurements. When is it dangerous? When do we need to do something? And when is it harmless? So that's a future. That's a future aspect. Yeah.
Is there also a sex bias that you see? Like, do men actually tend to have more sleep apnea or sleep disordered breathing than women?
Yes. So that's a very good question. The gender profile is different. So women typically have more hypopneas, and it seems they snore either less or less loudly, but we honestly don't really know it though. We need to do actually objective studies to test that hypothesis because women don't like to snore and their partners are less likely than to tell them that they snore. It's not considered very feminine to snore. So it's one of the things we actually should test objectively. We can do that in our studies now. But all of the diagnostic criteria for sleep apnea were designed for men, because in the original studies, they were only men. So the women actually have a different symptom profile very often than the men. So they're less likely to get diagnosed, even if they go to a doctor and say they have sleep issues. They're more likely to be said to have insomnia. They're more likely to describe fatigue rather than sleepiness. And as with many disorders, unfortunately, the criteria are designed for men. And even if they do get a diagnosis saying, yes, you have sleep apnea, they're still even less likely to get treatment than men with the same index, which is also a huge problem. So in our study, we will also have very specific gender focus. So we aim to we will try to always have enough females in our study so we can do gender-specific analysis. So we will oversample for females.
Yeah, this is like a very good point that a lot of medical studies, I think, in the past have also primarily, also with, I think, with children with like different mood disorders as well, it's the diagnosis criteria. So it's great that you guys are looking at this. Do you also then plan not just look only at the diagnostic, but then also at the treatment side as well?
Yes, so that's also a very important part of the grant, and that is to use all of this technology to provide personalized therapy for patients. And we focus on this, it's called 4P medicine, which is a term I really like. And the 4P stand for predict, prevent, personalize, and participatory. So you want to be able to predict who is going to get severe sleep apnea in the future. So for to get them earlier. So typically in the sleep lab, we will get people in their 60s and 70s. They already have hypertension, cardiovascular disease, diabetes. They are obese and they have knee problems. This is very typical patient coming into the sleep lab, unfortunately. I would really like to get them 20 years earlier when they're starting to become overweight, they're not exercising enough, they're starting to snore, have sleep apnea on their back maybe. But you don't start not breathing 50 times per hour overnight. This happens gradually over time. So one of the studies we will do is a lifestyle study focusing on this group. So getting people earlier, doing a lifestyle program, which is then done over the internet. We will have a digital management platform. And we have a company that is specifically focused on lifestyle interventions using these apps. And we will work with people through this. So we have, this is a very interdisciplinary group that is working with us. So even just at Reykjavik University, where I'm working, we have engineers, computer scientists, sports scientists, and psychologists, as well as biologists like myself who are working on this, working on the project. So we will design an exercise program for them, and everything will be done using these apps. They will be able to do questionnaires. Some of it is daily, like a sleep diary, which is then online. We have a Norwegian company who's generating this instead of having this by paper. So you get a reminder every evening and every morning to fill in your sleep diary. We are designing a new sleep questionnaire that will then be done online. And we will have some that are done weekly and monthly to check how you're doing and feeling. And we will have tests, so you can do like an objective sleepiness test, the psychomotor vigilance test, the PVT. You can do that online and see if you're actually improving as you go along. So you've done a month in the lifestyle program, you're exercising more and doing more. Are you feeling better? And are you actually doing better? Are you performing better? And people will also be able to see like their own sleep study. They can listen to their own snores. And we will, and we will use the smartwatches as well. One of the watches that is coming out has, they are supposed to measure oxygen desaturations. So we're gonna validate if that works. If it does, then people can follow their own sleep apnea severity, at least in one way over the time of the study. So there will be a lot of data available to the patient, and then you have the patient participation. So they are actively involved in their own treatment. So there we have the prevent also, because you want to prevent that people get the disease. You want to predict who is going to be poor or who is going to have consequences. And personalized, so we have different treatment options for different stages of the disease, and participatory. In Norway, we will have another treatment option, which is to use oral myofunctional therapy, or doing online. So people will do a lot of exercises to strengthen their muscles and tongues, which will be interesting. We'll see how it goes. People doing that for an hour every day or whatever time it will actually take. But that is also for the milder cases. It has been shown to be very effective if people actually do the exercises.
So. Yeah, I heard that singing helps with snoring, that if you sing, that it helps with strengthening.
Yeah. Exactly, everything that strengthens. They also say it for the, what's it called again, the Australian...
The didgeridoo?
Didgeridoo, exactly. There are some studies on that even, yeah. So there is a basis, of course, to strengthen the muscles. And also, like with this lifestyle intervention, I mean, we know obesity is one of the largest risk factors for sleep apnea. It is we have other risk factors like having big tonsils, big tongue, or something that is closing the upper airway. But obesity and being overweight is by large the biggest one. And even if people don't lose weight, if they just start to exercise and become stronger, then their apnea, hypopnea severity is going down. So if we can get people to start moving more and exercising more, people who are more sedentary, then that is a very important thing.
How do you guys see with, like with the CPAP machine? I know that it's also sometimes very difficult to get patients to wear them. Is there anything with, I guess, changing how it fits on people's faces to make it a bit more comfortable, or?
So that is not a focus of the study, but we will have, so in the CESARA network, there will be many sites or institutions that will be doing CPAP treatment based on these new indexes versus the traditional way of doing things to see if we can get more CPAP adherence and better, more increase in how people are feeling. So these patient reported outcome measures, which we will be focusing on. And we, of course, then trust in the expertise of these centers, which are among the best in Europe, to do this really well. You need really good people who are fitting the patient with the right mask and the right device. And I think we will have that. Yeah.
So how many collaborators across how many countries are you covering?
So it's 37 collaborators or institutions, companies, and societies like the European Sleep Research Society, which is a formal partner in the application. And it is, I think it's 16 countries in total. All of them are in Europe, except one university is in Australia. They get, by being a part of a grant like this, they get then a supplementary grant from Australia. So it's an add-on by having Australia as well. Aside from the fact that they are really good collaborators, so it's good. And then we also have the support of like the European Respiratory Society. They're not a formal partner, but they fully support the application, which is of course also very important, because then we have the two main societies in Europe that are doing guidelines and changes to the way we diagnose and treat sleep apnea and other sleep disorders. So we have all the stakeholders we need to make actual changes. So our plan is in 4 years, we will have changed the way we do sleep medicine in Europe and hopefully then worldwide. So that's why we called the project Sleep Revolution. It's not a small aim we have.
Yeah, it looks like you guys have a lot planned in the next 4 years, but it looks like also you have a lot of collaborators, and it's nice that it's interdisciplinary. So you're working with a lot of people from different fields. So I'm really excited to actually see how the results are going, especially once you do the, in the next 2 years while you're doing the retrospective
yep,
studies.
Exactly. Yep. And we will also be doing some validation studies. So we're the company, the sleep diagnostic company involved is Nox Medical, which is also in Iceland. And they will be working very closely with us to improve the self-applied setup for sleep studies and changing it into a 3-day or 3-night setup, which I'm really excited about. So I think, I think we will be able to make real changes. And then after 4 years, people can actually start using that. They can start changing the way they do diagnostics in the real world, because we really need that. There is a big call to change the way we do things.
How would you say if there's somebody is suffering from sleep disordered breathing, if they could get involved in the project, maybe as a patient? Is this a way?
So we will connect with patient organizations in different countries where it fits, because we really want to have the end user experience also registered. So it's really important to us to have the patient feedback, for example, on the app, on how they like the questionnaires and if it is useful, the feedback they get, how things are changing, so that it is really as flawless as it can be in the future for people to actually use this technology. And one of the ideas is that for this digital management platform that we are generating, where people can see all of this data I mentioned before, that people can see their own data and they share it with us in the research, of course, while they're in the research. And then they can share the data they want with their healthcare practitioners. So they can choose who has access to the data. So if they have, for example, a cardiologist and they want to show them what they've been doing, they can send that data to that person. So we will definitely collaborate with patient organizations for like if someone is listening and is like, oh, I want to be in the study, we will advertise, of course, when it comes to that. I've been keeping a list in Iceland of people who want to participate. We've had probably had like 100 people already that are saying, yes, I'm happy to be a research subject. And so I keep a list of them for now. But overall, we will do advertisements and find the correct people that way.
It's really great that you guys are involving kind of the patient feedback, because I think this is something that is not always considered in, I guess, medical treatments, and especially something like this where you're using an app and getting the feedback. So this is going to be really cool to see, and also getting people even more interested about their own health when you can.
Yeah. And I think it's something we have to consider for all future medicine. I mean, I really enjoy this 4P concept, and participatory is one of the big goalposts of that. It's one of the P's. So it has to be participatory, and then we have to get their feedback, because there's no way for me to know how they, if they hated or liked something in the program or not.
Yeah. And it really, I think, helps with compliance if it's, I think also with something with sleep apnea, where if you need to do additional things to be treated, then it's, this is mm-hmm. going to be really exciting to see how people respond.
Thank you.
I also just have a more general question, because it's also very, it's really cool because you're also, quite a young scientist, and to be awarded such a large grant. Thank you. I was just wondering if you had general advice for, PhD students or like those that are mm-hmm. entering the field of sleep research and how to navigate what they would like to do.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, no, I really enjoy that question also, because I actually was the founder of the Early Career Research Network in the ESRS. So I can still belong there, because it's less than 10 years since I graduated. But I think I'm maybe drifting into mid-career at the moment. But I think the way I got really involved in the International Society of Sleep was to get involved in the first with the National Sleep Society. So I am now the president of the Icelandic Sleep Research Society. And then I got involved in the ANSS, which is the Assembly of National Sleep Societies, because as the president, you go to a yearly meeting. And I learned when I went to these meetings, and also when I went to conferences and I started speaking to people, that I mean, most people are just really nice. And even if they are a very respected scientist, they are still really happy to discuss science, no matter if you are another really high level scientist or PhD student. I mean, PhD students have a lot of knowledge and they're really in depth in what they are doing. So it is always fun to discuss. So my recommendation is, first of all, go to a conference. Don't just talk with the people that came with you. Try to just go off on your own and meet a lot of new people. Talk with people in the elevator, at the stands, people sitting next to you at a lecture. Go talk to the lecturer if you really want to ask them something, because then you make new connections. So I really, for me now to go to a conference is so much fun, because I know so many people in the field. And if I had never stepped out of my comfort zone and actually started speaking with somebody, I would still just be talking with the other Icelanders that I can eat lunch with every day. So that was one. And the other one is, if you really are interested to make changes, become active in your societies, become active in your university or in your National Sleep Society, and then, go into European Sleep. People are really happy if you're interested and willing to do some work. Then most people will welcome you into the stream.
Yeah, I think that's really good advice. And I have to say that, when I was a PhD student, I was very intimidated at conferences. I also definitely, there was always some professors or postdocs that I would email beforehand to to see if I could run into them.
But it's definitely, that's also a good idea. You can schedule like a coffee or something.
Or I would just kind of like stalk them from see which talks they were giving.
That's also a good idea. And then when they're done, you kind of stand there and wait until they're finished and you walk out with them and ask them questions. It's a good tactic.
But it's definitely very intimidating, I think. And also, definitely being involved in the research and the different societies is, also very excellent advice.
I met some of my most important collaborators this way. I went to talk with them after they finished the talk, because I found what they were doing very interesting. So some of the really main collaborators in the project, like the Timo Leppänen from Finland, they have a very big role in the project. I went and did exactly what you were describing after his talk. I basically said, hey, we have to talk. I really like what you're doing. This is so interesting. And from there, we started collaborating. So it makes science fun. And then you make friends as well, which is, it's a really nice combination.
Yeah, I really hope that next year that we can have these in-person
yes.
meetings again.
Yes, I really miss them also. It's not the same to just do it via the computer.
So, although, I mean, you're in, I don't know, the auroras right now, so that's pretty nice.
It actually looks nicer than what is outside at the moment. But yes, we do see them like this sometimes. They are really amazing. So you should come to Iceland and see them. But it is also nice to get off the island once in a while, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely would love to come to Iceland. I will let you know.
Excellent. Sounds good.
Yeah. So do you have any, I guess, last comments that you would like people to know about the project or about, sleep science?
I think just really good. And I'm really happy for the support of the ESRS. I mean, they're really... full partner in this. Walter McNicholas, who is now the past president of the ESRS, and he is in charge of the large work that the ESRS is doing in part of the grant. He's in charge of one of the work packages. They have 13 work packages. So it tells you that the ESRS is really willing to go the extra mile and do the changes, and ESRS is very dedicated to make the changes we think are needed in sleep medicine. So if people are thinking of these along these lines, they should contact the ESRS and see if we can work together.
We're very excited for all the collaboration that's going to come out of this, and hopefully it'll really help and change people's lives.
Exactly, that is always the end purpose. We have to remember that.
Thank you again for joining us today, and keep us posted on your developments.
Will do. Thank you. Bye-bye.